Today we'll be discussing black and white versus shades of gray alignment. Welcome to Dueling GMs. I'm Joseph.
And I'm Anthony.
This is a show for GMs and players.
What about designs and details?
To build a better role-playing community. So we have different ways of measuring morality, right? Yeah. Different systems, different tabletop games, different philosophies of life. There's lots of different ways to measure morality. So let's kind of go down the rabbit hole a little bit, if you will, and get into some of this. So we got the black and white morality. Let's maybe define what that is and then sort of go from there. So what is black and white morality to you? And that might sound subjective, but that's how we're going with this.
But it's black and white.
Sure. Okay. Continue.
Now, the easiest way for any, you know, card carrying geek to identify with like a black and white morality is Star Wars. Mm-hmm. Right, you got the light side and the dark side of the force, and there's a lot of people who would get extremely up in arms over the idea that there may even be gray Jedi out there, because it very much is. It's a good and evil, bad versus, you know, a righteous, you know, justice versus, you know, whatever you want to throw on the other side. It's very mm-hmm. much a dichotomy, and you can pit them against each other.
Yeah, it's a very dualistic approach where you have, you know, something that is hard to say that it's not anything other than blank, whether right. that's good or bad.
And it makes it easier both in real life, because we do this a lot as people groups, which is why it seems to make a lot of sense that we have them in our games as well. It makes it easy for us to identify with certain people and then to look at the others as them. It's an us versus them mindset.
Yeah, you always have an enemy at that point, and you know, that kind of tension drama is good for story and plot, which is fantastic for tabletop games, right?
Yeah.
So you mentioned Star Wars. It's a good example of, you know, you got the Sith and Jedi for that dichotomy there. When is this type of morality useful in tabletop games specifically?
I mean, obviously, kind of what we were just talking about, when you're trying to make a very clear-cut delineation between two different groups, that you can show, okay, this person has this group has slavery, this group is anti-slavery, right? Or this group is about war and this group is about peace, and you can find your the ways that you fall on either side of the fence pretty easy if you're trying to do a very moralistic, you know, good guys win out, evil guys lose type of campaign.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can have, that clear delineation of the big, bad, evil guy versus just some other person that may or may not be, you know, similar in terms of alignment with you, or, you know, there's no sidestepping him high. It's like, no. It's like you said, us versus them.
Right.
That's pretty straightforward there. There are at least certain spells in D&D 5e, like Detect Good and Evil, that, you know, it requires this type of, you know, morality to exist to some extent.
Well, and yeah, they've done away with it a lot in 5th edition, but if you look at older editions or even the current, you know, edition of Pathfinder's 2nd edition, they have that still kind of in the game. Even though Pathfinder's backed off a little bit too, but there, you used to have certain creatures or certain abilities that they were either immune to or resistant to good or evil, or you even had the opposite. The other spectrum, you had or the axiomatic versus anarchic. And so there were certain creatures that did bonus axiomatic damage because they were so lawful. and other creatures that were completely immune to that type of damage. So there were a lot of items that also could only be utilized by people with certain alignment and would potentially even hurt you if you touched it and you were part of an opposing alignment. So a lot of that used to be built into older systems. Fifth edition's kind of done away with it, and alignment's gone a little bit by the wayside since then. But part of it is because it's not even necessarily, you know, hard coded into the, you know, the system anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. I know there's a couple items still floating around in 5e, you know, artifacts and whatnot, that definitely, you know, requires a certain alignment, or, you know, if failed, you know, saves, then it might actually switch the alignment of the user itself.
Yeah. And even then it's a little more loosely translated. They'll say it requires attunement by a non-good character or something like that, which still gives you, you know, if you're using all your boxes, that gives you six options, you know?
Right.
So even then, it's not as specific as certain things, you know, and this is only able to be wielded by a chaotic neutral character.
Right.
But yes, you're right. There are a few things, especially as you get up into more like legendary items and artifacts and stuff like that.
Yeah, so I know some lore as well with 5e. It's not, again, not as prevalent as maybe earlier editions, but, you know, you had the lawful versus chaoticness of devils and demons. You had, you know, good and evil with, you know, celestials versus, you know, fiends. Where does this, you know, objective morality, so to speak, exists within lore, or does it exist based on the GM, or, you know, what do we put the emphasis on here if it's this type of black and white morality?
Yeah, I mean, what you said was pretty spot on, with especially with your devils and your demons. If you're running a campaign that is going to heavily emphasize one or the other, or it's going to lean into a lot of the planar wars, if you're doing things that are specifically have their own built in, you know, years and years, decades and decades of lore that's written, Forgotten Realms type of thing, then they have those in existence. If you're doing your own homebrew setting, your players may and characters may not honestly know the difference between a devil or a demon. They could just get lumped into the fiend idea. Mm-hmm. But it may absolutely matter for your world to know that demons are chaotic and you should never trust them no matter what. Devils are lawful, so if they give you their word, they're going to hold to their word, but assume that they built something into the contract where they're still going to screw you over at the end, because at the end of the day, both of them are still objectively evil.
Yeah. So when is it a good time to have that type of objective morality, so to speak, or when do they become a hindrance?
Well, I think that's to me, that's when it's important is if the setting dictates it. When they're a hindrance is, at least in my mind, any other time.
All right.
So, but I tend to not really like looking at the world in terms of black and white. So I'm probably a bad person to ask. And it also is worth, you know, the listener knowing that you and I got started in tabletop gaming at a point where this was starting to kind of change a little bit already. Mm-hmm. And playing with groups and with GMs where this is not a hard and fast rule. So we kind of have our preferences partially just because we weren't brought up and we didn't learn the system back when it was so vitally important. Mm-hmm. So it's easier for us to kind of look at the entire thing objectively and say, well, we'll probably move past it. But it's worth noting that there are so many other people that are, you know, still used to playing that type of thing, and there maybe is some value to, you know, for them in that approach. Well, yeah, what else do you think on hindrances, though?
I mean, the first thing that kind of comes to my mind is like RP with oaths for like paladins. I think GMs do put a lot of emphasis on, well, are you following your oaths, right? There's a whole oath breaker. Therefore, it has to be a little bit more emphasized. So, you know, you got to be lawful in the sense of following your oaths or you break it. And that sort of is built into the class mechanics of a paladin.
Yeah. The nice thing, though, is that nowhere in there does it require you to actually pick a particular alignment. It's just
true.
It's just follow a path and adhere to your oaths. So even that is a huge step in a different direction from previous iterations, you know, all the way up through 3.5 and I think fourth edition, although I admittedly never played fourth at all. But all the way up through 3.5 and first edition Pathfinder, which is, you know, just the offshoot of 3.5, lawful good. That was your option for a paladin, was lawful good. Similarly, a barbarian had to be chaotic. The other stuff didn't matter, but a barbarian had to be chaotic. There were certain things that was just kind of written in that you had to be these particular alignments. So they got rid of the chaotic thing, obviously, for the barbarian, and they introduced the idea of oaths for paladins. So not only do paladins not necessarily have to adhere to a deity, which was also new.
True.
They adhere to a particular oath, a code, and then what that code is still allowed. Well, what we're getting ready to get into, which is shades of gray within those oaths.
Yeah. So, yeah, let's switch gears and jump into that then. Shades of gray alignment. What is that? You mentioned it a couple times. I mentioned it a couple times.
Yeah, for me, and I think maybe you and I have a slightly different definition of this, so I'm interested in hearing your definition as well. But for me, shades of gray is the idea that there is no us or them exclusively for all cases. There may be us and them in this decision, and then in my next decision, well, I may actually need to be part of the them. Or we need to redefine who us and them is in that situation, that I can operate out of certain tendencies, but that doesn't mean that I have to always make that same decision and I have to always 10 times out of 10 decide to do this exact same thing, regardless of the subjectivity of the decision. We can get into why here in a little bit, but before I dig too far in on that, what's your take on Shades of Grey?
Shades of Grey alignment, to me it's a lot more subjective, where in contrast to that, devils and demons are, you know, inherently and always evil. The subjectiveness with the Shades of Grey is, yeah, sometimes they're actually doing something that might better themselves, but it actually, you know, betters a handful of people. Well, now it's a greater good situation. You know, creates a lot of interesting moral and philosophical questions, and it might make, you know, some players' heads hurt in a good way. But yeah, it's a lot more subjective, where, you know, what, you know, someone believes is right isn't necessarily wrong. It's not necessarily, you know, correct, but it's their way of doing things, and that's their belief choice. So
how do you determine in that definition alone, so I know this is probably where we don't fully see eye to eye, how do you then determine at least a starting point for any type of alignment, or do you not?
Honestly, for me, I would say you don't. Like you said, in terms of choices, you know, it might be a choice that creates an us them for now, and then the next choice I'm with them. Well, who's to say that you were right first, or you were right joining them, or not? It's, to me, it's just a arbitrary sliding scale of, you know, at the time it's this, and at another time it's this, but it almost takes away alignment as a definition altogether.
Okay. I sort of see where you're getting. So here's where, when I'm running, and then even when I create a character, if I do anything alignment related, I look at alignment as a way of kind of doing a very rudimentary typing system, personality typing system. And you know me, I've got a background in doing, you know, Myers-Briggs assessments, and also, you know, teaching workshops on Enneagram. So like, I'm really big into the personality world, and this is the closest thing really that most systems, tabletop systems, use to help you determine what's your personality. Yes, they have your traits, your flaws, that type of thing. But a lot of times that is giving you very specific examples and not necessarily figuring out the why behind things, or like what is like, how are you hard coded to operate? And what are your personal like tendencies? And so for me, when I look at alignment, I'm looking at that. It may not be 10 times out of 10 that I make this decision, but there's probably 6 times out of 10, I'm going to lean in a particular direction. And so I can check that little box and I can say, okay, most of the time I behave in this particular way. And then the people around me, either in real life or, you know, people sitting at the table with those, you know, the characters that are sitting, you know, there with me, they can also say, okay, well, they tend to usually operate in this particular way. So when they're operating out of character, I can either say there's something off and I need to figure out what's going on because that's not like them, or I can make a mental note and say, hey, you know, there's something going on and I need to watch it. Or then, you know, you flip it the, you know, on the far extreme and say, hey, that was completely out of character for you. Are you sure that's actually what your character is doing? We have the meta conversation at that point. And it's not that I'm forcing you to adhere to your, you know, particular alignment, but that seems really weird for your character to do, you know, example X, because that's typically the exact opposite of what you would do. So I'm just trying to double check here.
Yeah.
So for me, if you look at it as personality tendencies, it at least helps you kind of define yourself, especially early on. I think it's more important early on to have like a starting point for the character. But just like in real life, we tend to grow and we tend to adapt and our environment and our circumstances change us. You know, that's where Shades of Grey comes in for me, where I may have started off as a chaotic good individual, but because, you know, just the wear and tear of life and getting beat down constantly, I may slowly have been, you know, sliding to chaotic neutral, or I may start realizing this chaotic life that I'm living maybe has too much freedom. I'm not accomplishing a whole lot. And I start to slide to like a true neutral type of thing, because I'm realizing that this chaos is accomplishing nothing in my life. And so for me, Shades of Grey is the ability to kind of slide over time as the story develops and as my character develops to become something different as a result of what's happened to me.
Interesting. Yeah. For me, just the way you are describing that, like, you know, you mentioned sliding from chaotic good into chaotic neutral and then true neutral, you know, even in a black and white system, there's nothing stopping someone from switching. This going from one typed box to another is and has been totally allowed. And that doesn't stop them. It's just there's the discretization, which is what, you know, you're taking a continuous line or a continuous scale and sort of discretizing or making chunks out of it. That is the definition of typing or categorization. And that already exists in, you know, the black and white morality of 5e. So having those, you know, discrete things to me says, okay, you know, you can slide from any of them to another, especially the ones that are adjacent, that makes sense. And that has nothing to do with Shades of Grey. You know, you just said, okay, well, you can color code them and to get certain shades, if you want, you know, evil to be a certain color, you know, like it just, there is that discretization that exists, and that's already in the black and white morality.
Yeah, I think the difference, though, is that it's almost frowned upon to change alignments, or changing alignments is almost like forced on you by your GM based on decisions that you've made. And so they're usually like the only time anybody changes alignments is when they make a drastic one-time change, and the GM's like, fine, you can do that, but your alignment is forever changed to this other box.
I think that would be
still black and white to me. But if you ask most people that A, play with alignment, and B, have had alignment shifts, that's the story they'll tell you. It's not a slow kind of drifting and then realizing one day I probably have changed over time. It's I can tell you the exact moment where my alignment changed, which is not how we operate in the real world, right? We don't wake up one day and say, I've decided to be evil. We wake up one day and we look at the sum of our life and realize I probably have not been a very good person my entire life. And I'm just now realizing this.
Yeah, I guess it depends on how much insight and self-reflectiveness that person has. They might still be like, I am a good person.
Well, so that's true. And sometimes that makes for a great villain, right? The one who thinks they're doing it for the right reason. But they still are not the type that wakes up one day and decides I'm going to do all of these terrible things, still thinking I'm a wonderful person. Like, yeah, there's still like the slow slipping into that. And we don't really play it that way for the most part. And so that's the black and white that I see. And the shades of gray comes in the idea that I can, over the course of entire campaign, maybe change alignment 3, 4, 5 times and maybe circle back around to the one I started with, but only if the story dictates it and it makes sense for my character.
Gotcha.
So, yeah, and I can live in the in between, and I can also make decisions that are outside of that, knowing that most of the time the decisions are fairly predictable based on the typing. But again, that's me knowing a lot of psychology and knowing a lot about how people work, and knowing that for the most part, people are very, very stereotypical.
Yeah.
I hate stereotyping people, but at the same time, people are very predictable.
Sure. I think the problem though is just how it gets presented, that the GM forces you to switch alignment without conversations, or like you said, you pointed out, like if you recognize a personality shift, you might even meta conversate saying, hey, this isn't really you, or, you know, maybe you're, you know, switching gears. That's fine. That's still, you know, recognizing where they were versus what they're doing now. And it might not be one instance, but it might be worth pointing it out a couple times or a few times until they recognize that they did in fact make that switch or not. That's still just self-reflectiveness, and maybe with the help of others, you know, including or not including the GM. Now, if the GM imposes or enforces something like that, that could be done either way, right? Like,
sure.
Like, it has nothing to do with, you know, the blocks of categories or a sliding scale. If the GM says you're this, it's worth just further conversations on whether you agree or disagree with them.
I think the biggest argument I would have against kind of how you would define the shades of gray, because I don't think we're quite as far apart as maybe you might think there, but I think the biggest argument I would have against just not using any type of alignment is you have that one guy, or maybe that group of people, that when they're together and they make a particular type of character, then they all end up doing this same type of thing, that they're playing characters that on the surface they're saying, we're all about freedom, we're all about, you know, restoring people from tyranny and breaking the shackles. Meanwhile, they just tortured and interrogated a guy for information. They still got him chained up in the back room, you know, of the tavern. He's half dead, you know, and they basically do that entire thing. Or if you're not on our side for this freedom from tyranny, we're going to burn down your town and, you know, leave it just crumbling to dust. You have that opportunity in a role-playing world to make these wide swinging decisions especially if you have a GM that's not going to actually have the repercussions, or the repercussions are, I'm going to throw more combat at you. And that's what the characters want anyway, is more fights. And so they look at it as a challenge, and they, what they're role-playing one moment versus what they're role-playing another moment versus what they're saying in a different moment, and who they're backing in terms of a faction or a kingdom, like they don't always mesh at all. And part of that is because they don't know who they are. They're just doing whatever seems fun and on a whim to them. And they're not really embracing the personality or alignment of the characters.
Yeah, I mean, if they don't embrace personality, I think, like, to me,
because they could say, well, this is just who my character is, you know, that's the stereotypical, you know, explanation there. But, well, is it? Because if you're doing one thing one moment, another thing another moment, that doesn't tell me who your character is. That just tells me you, the player, are overly chaotic and are trying to cause mass chaos and destruction, and you don't actually care about the story or really about your character enough to invest in becoming a cohesive character.
So if it's alignment and it, and they're just all over the place, then I guess that would be the shades of gray, because it's hard to pinpoint the alignment altogether. Right.
Right, that's what I'm saying. So having some sort of a baseline is still important to me in determining shades of gray, where I think your understanding or your definition of shades of gray is there is no baseline. Do what you want.
There is no baseline. You can choose to do what you want. And if it doesn't make sense, that you're just, you know,
more it's chaotic. What my character would do.
It becomes more chaotic. So they start to be this wild card, sure. Which is why we need at times, you know, the categorization, and that might put them into chaotic neutral or chaotic evil, you know, and that's where the, again, at least with the nine, to me, that is some semblance of categorization, which falls under black and white.
Yeah. I'm just trying to figure out where you can actually help. I think providing parameters, providing guardrails for people is important.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, again, going back to just real world examples, and we've sat down, you know, we've talked through our individual personality types and stuff like that. And it's so helpful. It's so useful for understanding how you operate, how you tick, what your tendencies are, maybe some of your blind spots and stuff like that. And that's for you, the person, you know, better than anybody else in the world. It would make sense that we should actually want to lean into that as a way to understand the motivations and mindsets of characters that we're literally making up on the fly and are only subsets of us. Again, having a baseline starting point, anybody who does acting, like, that's the approach, is I need to know, what is this character's motivation? What has driven them to become the type of person that they are, and what is, like, pushing them forward? You know, all those types of questions that they need to ask. Are you in some ways coming up with a baseline for how to play the character? And you may say, you know, it's shades of gray because we're not necessarily codifying stuff. But if you have any type of backstory written down and the backstory is cohesive, then you sort of are giving yourself, you know, a codified alignment. It just may not be one of those nine types that we usually refer to. But in some ways, who have I been and who am I wanting to become is an alignment of sorts, because people can still point at those two things and say, that jives with all the you're doing right now, or that doesn't mesh. Does that make sense?
I think what you're saying, though, you added a more direct mapping. You're trying to map personalities to how they are personally, where alignment is not that.
Oh, and but I'm saying that black and white moral alignment, the way that they used to be set up, is terrible. But alignment as we have those nine boxes or whatever defined can be useful only if we look at it more from the perspective of personality.
I mean,
and that's where to
character creation. Yes, I will agree, because that's by definition what we're trying to, you know, what we're set out to do.
Right. And even over time, you know, I'm five levels in. Am I still operating out of the same mindset? Am I still driven by the same concepts? Again, we have the flaws, ideals, traits, all that type of stuff for a reason. And they're just kind of, you know, phrasing versions of helping you figure out your alignment. They even have in little parentheses, this would be the type of phrase that somebody that is chaotic would say, right? It kind of helps you determine your alignment even then.
Yeah, yeah, it definitely, that, you know, having self-reflection to determine if you are in the same category that you started out, or, you know, one level prior versus now, is, you know, did you slide from one cube to another, or one square to another? Great. You didn't. Okay. Or, you know, you thought about it and you're like, I am starting to, and I want to stay in that category. Well, you have the choice of sliding back in or not. Again, to me, this is just, you know, my sure. My perspective, but, you know, if it's a box, then there is somewhere, you know, you switch from neutral good to chaotic good, and that is just the frequency on how chaotic versus neutral you are. If it's, you know, 60 times out of 100, you chose the chaotic choice instead of the neutral choice. You know, at what point do you say, that's, I'm still neutral, even though I'm acting more chaotic, you know, majority of the time. And maybe at that point, the GM says, okay, you've reached your 60 limit mark. You're now chaotic good. Hopefully they're talking to the players, and hopefully the players are thinking about it themselves. And, you know, if they want to stay neutral, that they swing back into it, I guess. And they, you know, make that the 60 out of 100, you know, in terms of choices.
Yeah. And I think if we were going from the standpoint of it being punitive and there being a lot of abilities and items and classes that were either locked out of or locked into based on them, like they used to be, that would be more important to track. And if anybody played older systems, that's what I would probably recommend that they do, is actually have some sort of a tracking sliding scale to see how far down the slippery slope that they fall, you know, outside of, you know, their particular two, you know, axes. But we don't necessarily need that. Again, if we're just kind of using it to operate as a baseline, all it is every once in a while, then you do a quick assessment, maybe as a group, maybe you by yourself, maybe you and the GM, whatever, you know, works for your group. You do a quick, you know, inventory of your character and say, well, over the course of time, that's not my baseline anymore. My baseline seems to have shifted over into this. Maybe the things that I thought were really important to me aren't anymore. Maybe I've determined a new or different set of values for my life because of the things that have happened. And that's all that it is then providing a new baseline, just resetting the you know, the baseline every once in a while. So then I'm not feeling bad when I'm operating out of character, because it actually is in character for me, and nobody's looking at me funny for the same reason that, okay, things have just changed over time and my new baseline is this. And maybe it's a bigger jump. Maybe you've gone from chaotic good to true neutral, or chaotic good to neutral evil. And as long as it makes sense for that jump over time, then sure, there could be a lot of extenuating circumstances to make that jump. But I think that's part of character development, just like I think it's part of our own personal development when we realize that things, you know, in the way that we operate have changed too. So here, at some point, I want to dive into maybe a slightly different approach to how we look at the alignments, and maybe that'll help people who aren't really sure, you know, what this whole thing is, or have, you know, an aversion to the word evil, or an aversion to the word chaotic, or something like that. But go ahead.
Oh, no, you can jump into this. That's fine.
Okay. So there's, we got the nine boxes that we've talked about, right? And I guess we sort of danced around them. So maybe it's good quickly to, I will give you one of the boxes and you tell me just the stereotypical understanding of what this character is. I think I'm throwing this at you. You have not planned this ahead of time. So, so we'll start with the one that is possibly the easiest one to identify. Lawful good.
Okay. Lawful good are, you know, people that are expected to, you know, uphold value and justice and have that level of, I guess, honor and kindness, right?
Okay, you're giving me the nice answer. What's the stereotype? Give me the stereotype. What is lawful good?
Stereotype is, you know, adhering to the law and what they think is good above all else, no matter who it hurts or who it impacts.
Yeah, anything evil, stealing a loaf of bread, I will cut off your hand. You violated the law, right? That's lawful good. And it doesn't seem like it, but in its extreme, that's lawful good. In normal definitions. Okay, because you're adhering to a code, and that's a lot of what law is typically, you know, described as. And then good is good. Anything bad would not be good. Okay, lawful good is the easiest one. What about neutral good?
Neutral good, we got the same level of, you know, goodness that you do in the world, but you don't necessarily have to adhere to the same, you know, by the book. That could be sometimes going outside the, you know, outside the law, staying within the law. But yeah, they're just not beholden to a set of, you know, a code of some sort.
Or sometimes maybe their own code is about the closest that they've got, but it's not somebody else's that they're adhering to. That's usually, the definition there. Okay, you got the other extreme on the good side, chaotic good.
I mean, talking about codes, it's hardly even one that you hold yourself, but you just do different things, crazy things, sometimes just whatever you can do to keep good things in the world.
Chaotic good is often the type that's assumed to be all about freedom. They're anti-slavery. You even look at the pantheons usually for most games. The deities that are chaotic good are all anti-tyranny, anti-slavery. So freedom for everybody. They're the libertarians. Really, that's chaotic good is the libertarians. Everybody should be free to do whatever they want and have a good old time doing it. And so I'm going to go out of my way to, you know, break all the rules, but doing it for a good cause. That's your chaotic good. Okay. Let's go to the opposite end of the spectrum. Cause again, I think you, the far ends are the easiest ones to define. So we'll save the middle ones for last. How about lawful evil?
Lawful evil. I mean, it's putting yourself first over, you know, the common good. Lawful is still adhering to a certain, you know, strict code of some sort. It doesn't have to be, it's definitely at least your own, but it probably is, you know, making use of the law to further, you know, gains for your self-interest.
Yeah. So again, you're being too nice on your stereotyping,
I guess.
But so you're getting closer to what I know you and I usually look at the alignments as actually being, which is good. But for most people, if you hear the word evil, then you're thinking evil, right? Most people, they're ruthless, they're cruel, they're selfish. That's what evil means, right? And then lawful means there's some sort of a code that they abide by, even if it's their own word. So if you can get a lawful evil person to make you a promise, well, they're not going to break the promise. They're probably just going to twist it a little bit to say that they stayed within the lines. And then going back to the fiend conversation, devils are lawful evil. And so, you know, anybody operating from, you know, the devil side of the spectrum, it's all this type of thing. What about the other end? So I'll save the neutral here for just a second. We go to the other end, the chaotic evil. What's a stereotype for that?
Yeah, all right, chaotic evil. I would say, you know, doing whatever you want to do, regardless of repercussions. You know, again, it's that doing whatever you want could be, and that might have been our definition or a different definition of, you know, evil there. But I think stereotypically, you know, you have just the demons, just, you know, causing mayhem and usually at the expense of everyone else.
Yeah. Or lawful evil is I want to subjugate the entire world and rule it. Chaotic evil, the stereotype is I want to destroy the world, cover it in darkness. Those types of tropey things is your chaotic evil.
Yep.
Okay. So the one that's a little harder to nail down, what about a neutral evil?
Neutral evil. Yeah, it is a little harder to nail down. I'd say, you know, sometimes you follow the law itself. Other times it's more that, you know, personal code. And sometimes it's, you know, just doing evil for the sake of evil, I guess.
Yeah, it kind of is. There's not really any variation like you have with chaotic, but there is no like honor or code behind it either. They're just evil for the sake of, yeah, for the sake of being evil. Evil for evil's sake.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's all the good and that's all the evil, which leaves the neutral side of things. So let's go with, I know I'm hopping around. Anybody trying to picture this grid is having a hard time following. But I'm really trying to like nail down the ones that are easier before we talk about the one that's harder. So let's go chaotic neutral. If you have any type outside of lawful good or chaotic evil that's super, super tropey, it's chaotic neutral. So what are they like?
Yeah, so if we're talking, as you mentioned, like, you know, chaotic being, you know, equating to freedom, right? I guess chaotic neutral is protecting your own freedom and maybe the interests of others' freedom, but mostly just you yourself's freedom. You know, it's not really hurting anyone. It's not helping anyone. It just is freedom.
Yeah, they're the champion of anarchy, really. Yeah. And sometimes chaotic neutral characters are the types that anything closely resembling order and authority or even harmony in society, they are looking to destroy or disrupt in some way. And this is a typical character that says, oh, I'm just playing my character. I'm just being chaotic and I'm just kind of deciding what's good for me. And they try to classify themselves as chaotic neutral. But that's fair. Like we talked about, that's fairly short-sighted. Okay. So that one's the easier one. What about the other end of that spectrum, lawful neutral?
Yeah. You know, they still got their own code. You know, it might be not necessarily, you know, out to subjugate the world. And it's not, you know, the code of, you know, to keep the justice and, you know, to keep the justice. It's kind of like maybe like the way a merc might, you know, a mercenary might be like, I don't kill, you know, children and women, or I don't, you know, or, you know, I don't steal amongst thieves. You know, you got your own code, but it's not really benefiting, you know, overall, and it's not hurting overall. It's just kind of, it's more you centric, but affects like I feel like a smaller group if we're talking like the greater good, you know.
Yeah, it because it's often a personal code of conduct. Yeah. And not a, you know, posted one for everybody else. Yeah, just like chaotic neutral, is like chaos in the absence of good or evil. Lawful neutral is kind of the same idea. It's law for the sake of law.
Right.
There's no good. There's no evil. There just is the law. And so you follow these things because it's what the law is. And if the law changes, well, we adhere to the law, not because it's good. And we don't try to overthrow the law because it's bad. We adhere to it because it's the law. And then it leaves us with the last one right in the center of most of these charts, which is true neutral. So what's our stereotype of true neutral?
Stereotype of true neutral is just, I don't want to deal with it.
Yeah.
You know, just leave me out of it. Is it good? Is it bad? Does it benefit me, others? Just, nah, I'm okay.
Yeah. If the,
indifference, I guess.
It really is. It's apathy and indifference. If you've ever played a stoner or a stoner adjacent character, there's a good chance you have played true neutral, or at least have leaned into a true neutral concept quite a bit. But yeah, it's more apathy, indifference. I don't have any conviction down any of the axes, and any of those could potentially be dangerous to their extremes.
I think the other thing that just comes to mind, I feel like in D&D 5e, they kind of emphasize that druids tend to be true neutral, because it's like, you know, you got the Lorax side of things where, you know, you harm the forest, you got to go through me, and that could be seen as evil. Other times, you know, they bring bountifulness to the land, which could be seen as good. So maybe on average, if they're, you know, beating up people that enter their forests and then blessing their fields, it kind of comes up as a wash. I don't know.
Right. Well, and that was one of the other classes that used to have to be true neutral.
Yeah. Right.
You couldn't play a druid. So yeah, the fact that they're recommending it, or they tend to be, there's that word, tendencies.
Right. Yeah.
But I mean, we've got a number of druids in a couple different games that we've got going on, and all of them are vastly different in their approaches. I don't think any of them are true neutral. So
I think you're right.
Yeah. Okay. So those are kind of the stereotypical approaches. You and I have talked about alignment a couple different times over the last couple of years, and we always seem to keep coming back to this one particular website that we'll refer to here. I'll put a link in the show notes for anybody who wants to go to it, but it is Easy Damus. I have no idea if I'm pronouncing that right, but EasyDamus.com. It's fantastic. He's got breakdowns on all your traditional types of alignments, but then there's a section that he has called Real Alignments, and it's a pretty detailed, pretty thorough essay or set of essays if you look at some of the other writings that he's got on here. And I wanted to kind of hit on a couple of things that he talked about, because it really helped to reshape. Again, maybe if you're in Joseph's category, just get rid of alignment altogether. And that's probably fine. But for me, being the personality typology type of person that I am, I really liked his different approach. And understanding that probably a lot of the characters that you're playing are evil characters. You just didn't realize it because you didn't like the word evil. and so having an understanding of more of the idea that all nine types are actually probably represented in your games, rather than we've got nine types. If you're playing three of them, you're not going to last very long in the group. And certain ones are probably going to get you ostracized. Also, we're looking at you, Lawful Good Paladin. I really liked it for that approach. And like I said, it's pretty thorough. I really recommend you go to the website, but we're going to try to kind of hit on some of the high points, and help you wrap your brain around maybe a slightly different understanding of all the types. So he uses that same, 3x3 grid and, breaks it down into a couple different categories, which I think are helpful. Because like we talked about, good is always seen as preferable over evil, right? Mm-hmm. And lawful, typically for most people, is seen as preferable over chaotic. And so maybe part of the problem with why people choose the alignments that they do is not that the alignment system is broken, but that we have certain connotations to certain words. So maybe let's change the words a little bit to help us understand. So he defines good as humane. What is humane? What is the thing that is going to be most beneficial and do the least amount of harm to people and society and the environment? Which I think, okay, great. Now I can understand that. And it isn't this intrinsic code of morality. It's just what will do the least amount of harm. It's the Hippocratic Oath, right? That the doctors have to take of first do no harm. So, okay, we can wrap our brain around that. The opposite side then of good that we would label as evil. We mentioned that usually you think of evil as ruthless and cruel and selfish, but he says evil characters would probably more likely see themselves as determined, self-reliant, and steadfast in their beliefs. Okay, that makes sense. This is kind of a personal perspective. And so he pits the good is humane and then evil is determined. I am very steadfast in my approach and very dogged in my determination. Okay, cool. That gives us a little bit to work with. And then the neutral side of things on the good and evil spectrum is the blend between the two. The understanding you can't always be determined and bulldoze people over. You also can't always be humane and never do anything any harm. That just walking down a path, you've probably killed a few ants. You probably trampled on some blades of grass. You maybe have to hurt some people along the way to accomplish the greater good. So the middle ground that he establishes for neutral is realistic. Which again, we can wrap our brains around that. So I like that. Humane, realistic, and determined. Do you have any immediate thoughts on those three ideas?
No, I think, you know, it definitely, you know, puts them in a different light in a good way, so that you don't just, you know, say, oh, this is the evil villain, but, you know, maybe it's just a determined individual.
Well, and you can think of certain characters in our campaigns that are running, that we're running right now. If you were just to use those three categories only, there's probably a number of characters that lean very heavily into the lawful good, neutral good category that I would 100% put in the determined category.
Sure. Yeah.
So again, it kind of helps you rethink a little bit on the scope. Okay. So that's the good, neutral, evil. What about lawful, neutral, chaotic? So lawful, he describes as honorable. The idea of choosing to pursue honor, and honor means adhering to a code, whatever that code might be. So I may be the crusading samurai, but I'm only going to do that to obtain honor or to regain honor that was lost. And even the evil, you know, air quote around evil samurai, is potentially also only doing what he's doing to pursue honor. He will die honorably. He will fight honorably. That is his drive. Okay, so I can understand that one. Any qualms on that one?
No, I mean, like you said, honorable equates to a code, you know. So, you know, there's definitely evil that targets only certain towns or certain people or, you know, certain, you know, things like that. So, you know, killing criminals only is still honorable. But yeah, falls under lawful evil there.
That makes sense. Then he's got on the opposite end of the spectrum, it's not the honorable thing to do, but it's the independent way to approach things. So what if you don't adhere to a code, whether it's personal or collective, right? Societal code. Well, that person chooses to be independent. That they're not chaotic because they're unpredictable and impulsive, but they're chaotic because they're free thinking and they're not bound by the restrictions of society. And so the chaotic person would say, I'm an independent thinker. I'm an independent actor. I don't have to adhere to all of your, you know, traditional codes and values. So honorable on one side and independent on the other side. And then down the middle, we have practical. That sometimes adhering to a code, following the law, is the most reasonable thing to do. We're going to not get out of the situation by being dumb and being the quote free thinkers of society. We probably should just, you know, not steal from the shopkeeper, right? That's the practical thing to do. So the middle ground is probably adhering only to a code is a bad idea, and only trying to buck the trends of whatever society says is probably not a good idea either. So let's do the practical thing in the situation. So then you have two different descriptors for each of the categories. So instead of lawful good, then you have honorable and humane. The true neutral, you know, would be practical and realistic. And then on the opposite side there, chaotic evil would be independent and determined. And I won't go through the rest of those. You can kind of extrapolate all of that if you're interested, or like I said, go to the website and find that out. But I think that gives us a working like understanding of all nine types in a way that we could say, oh, we can actually use more than six of them. Right. And probably most of my characters need to be redone in their alignment types.
Yeah, it's true.
So I thought that was a really cool way of looking at it. And he does a great job of breaking down from these studies, like societal psychological studies, determining like universal value systems, and works off of the 10 motivations that they have for that. 10 motivations are self-direction, stimulation, hedonism, achievement, power, security, conformity, tradition, benevolence, and universalism. And does a great job of describing all of that, lines everything up on a nice little grid, a pie chart, to show you where everything kind of falls into place. And again, you can look at all the details, but what he ends up coming to at the end are a renaming convention to help you understand that all of the categories have intrinsic value, and all of them are alignments that can actually be played. So, and the way that he ends up wording it is this idea of, you could call them a path, just like your subclasses are the path of the berserker, or, you know, the way of the open hand, or whatever the case is. That he words it in a way that, again, takes out the negative or overly positive connotations of them. And so you come up with these. I'll give you this list, and then we can move on, kind of talk about stuff beyond that if we want. But he has the lawful good is now the path of integrity. This idea of conformity to tradition and benevolence. Those are the two like core motivations. Tradition and benevolence. Neutral good is the path of mercy. So the core motivations are benevolence and universalism. The chaotic good is now the path of liberty. So some of these terms are sounding a little bit familiar based on, you know, what we described, the idea of freedom, but it gives a little bit broader scope to it. So the path of liberty motivations are universalism and self-direction. I can choose my own path, right? Chaotic neutral, instead of just I'm going to purely pursue chaos, is the path of autonomy. I'm going to be my own person, self-direction, and then what stimulates me. I'll choose the thing that makes me happy, right? I'll choose the thing that is most interesting to me. Chaotic evil is kind of the weird one that sits all by itself, but even then, it's not bad. It's the path of luxury. Chaotic evil, their sole interest is in hedonism. What smells good, what tastes good, what feels good, what makes me happy. Those are the things I'm going to pursue, the pleasures of life to their fullest extent, the path of luxury. which I was like, okay, I could actually play a character like that, and I probably have before, but I've never really, I don't think I've ever fully classified any character I've played as chaotic evil. So again, it helps me kind of wrap my brain around the concept a little bit better.
Sure.
Neutral evil is the path of supremacy. They're about achievement and power. The lawful evil is path of ascendancy. So still power, but power and security. I'm going to have authority, and I'm going to make sure that everybody is safe and secure, but I'm going to do it because I'm in charge. Mm-hmm. So very similar, but the two have some pretty vast differences also. And the last two, lawful neutral, is the path of harmony. So pursuing security, that's the lawful side of things, but still also in the form of tradition, which I think is interesting. That hits lawful neutral pretty squarely for me. And then true neutral is right in the center of everything, the path of equity, all things being equal. And so they value all of the values equally. And their, you know, their biggest fear is to see anybody go to any of those extremes and isolate, which I think is really kind of what true neutral is. I value something for a time, and I value it for a reason, and then I move on and find other values, which kind of brings it full circle back around to this black and white versus shades of gray. And I almost feel like your argument is that our approach to alignment should be the true neutral approach, that I can choose what I value in the moment, and I can slide to various things, and nothing has to necessarily define me in any moment. Is it relatively accurate?
No.
Okay.
I think for this system now, with what we are defining with these, you know, we're mapping, I guess, traits, personality, things, I guess.
It's personal values, personal motivations. Values. Yeah.
So that becomes the objective morality of this system, right? It's not necessarily from gods or demons or, you know, other universal things, but it's based on, you know, personal values. So that becomes kind of the, you know, the thing to base everything off of, right?
Sure.
Of whether it's, so that falls under, to me, that this just brings it back to, you know, categories within this new, you know, system, which has black and white traits, I guess. Because if you are hedonistic, then anyone not hedonistic is going to be seen as evil, you know, to them.
No, you're so just, you have different values. There are different things that you hold as important to you. But it doesn't necessarily mean that they're evil.
They won't. There's going to be, I guess, that dichotomy. Like, it's a clear dichotomy between someone who's hedonistic versus someone who is, you know, traditional and benevolent.
It's the opposite end of the spectrum. Yes. I don't know that. Yeah. I think we have at least gone away from dichotomies at that point, which is nice, that there are different motivations, and so it's not just this or this, it's a blend of all of these things, and then you actually adhere to a blend of all of these other things. So it's not just a black and white either or at that point. It's not a binary switch.
Yeah, I mean, with a, you know, a grid, you're not going to get that. I agree, there's definitely a combination, and I think going from one to another, you know, fits either, whether it's the alignment ambiguity with the shades of gray or the black and white, there's still, I think what the promotion should be is the ability to go from one to another based on their values, based on other things, and not see that as a bad thing to switch or not, you know?
Yeah, that makes sense.
But whether that, how I see categorizations means that there's, you know, that there's, even if it's a 20 by 20 grid, you could say it's shades of gray, or you could say you can map it from, you know, white to black. You know, and if you do that enough times, it, you know, it might look a little close from one box to the next, but there's still that separation, right?
Yeah. Let me ask you this, and I think it's the last thing that I wanted, as I'm hearing from you. So the last thing I wanted to kind of push back on, I'm not sure if you had anything else in your notes to cover, but alignment, I hear you equating to morality. And I don't know that there's anything necessarily inherent to the concept of alignment that is supposed to also determine morality. In fact, I would say that outside of the good aligned, traditionally good aligned spectrum, most people, you know, most of the other six categories probably wouldn't necessarily even think in terms of morality, at least not to the same degree. And unless you're lawful good, morality isn't necessarily the number one thing that's on your mind in making your determination. It maybe factors in to some degree, but I think maybe part of the disconnect between our approaches is that you might be approaching all of this as a system of morality. And I would say, if that's the approach, I would 100% agree with you that shades of gray and not boxing ourselves in is the way to go. But I've never really looked at alignment as a system of morality.
I just pulled up the basic rules for alignment in 5e, and I'm partially incorrect, but it broadly describes its moral and personal attitudes.
Okay, but so maybe you were leaning toward moral, I was leaning toward personal, and it's a little bit of a blend of both.
Yeah, like to take the moral out of it, though, I don't think you can have alignment.
No, and that's why I would agree with you. You have to believe that certain things are right and certain things are wrong to some degree. But I think even the term morality is usually only adhered to by the people who think that they are moral. The people who don't really have any interest in it are the ones that would normally be classified as the neutral and evil, and they probably don't care as much about a system or a morality.
Well, that becomes the subjective shades of gray, which is difficult to then put in terms of morality. But if morality is even a part of it for alignment, it needs to be more objective than that. That's why I keep going back to that part. Like it's being missed in the personal aspect here. Though it's great. I think it's super important and helpful for role playing and, you know, understanding your character better. But to have it without moralness, or to say moral's subjective and you can shift it, like, yeah, okay, that's a lot of questions, you know, philosophically to discuss, I think, at another time. But to do it without moral, I think, is difficult. Because, yeah, I mean, everyone in their own eyes would be seen as good, potentially, you know, like, I don't think anyone would be like, I'm doing the wrong thing, I should stop this. So that's what I'm, you know, I feel like the moralness or the morality needs to be still a part of it. But how it's a part of it, you know, is it through a system of personal beliefs? Is it a system of, you know, some other, you know, gods defining, or the planes of existence coming to being? Or is it the greater good? Is it, you know,
the GM?
The GM, yeah, the GM could just say, you know what, in this campaign, hedonism is good. And now it sort of flips and rotates the alignment, so to speak, but yeah, it's still a new system and it's still black and white.
But I think that's a good place for us to land on. I think that's maybe when we decided to talk on this topic, that's kind of what we assumed we would end up landing on, is kind of what we say with everything else. You as a GM need to know your group. And then you as a group need to consult with your GM, that the GM can be flexible to change anything and should feel flexible to change anything to make sense for the campaign they're running and the setting that they're running in. If you're going to be very hard and fast Star Wars universe, tell people up front that that's how it's going to work. If you're going to be in a very morally ambiguous type of setting, make sure the people know that up front too. You guys knew going into the campaign, I'm running with you in our gigantic group, that there's two very large kingdoms that neither one of them, both of them think that they are the good guys. And everyone else looks at both of them and says, neither one of you are very good. And so right. Like you could have and have chosen not to, but you could have aligned yourself with either of those kingdoms and potentially been skewed slightly in one direction or the other as to who you thought were the good guys in the whole conflict. But you've chosen to kind of steer clear of that entirely. And I think part of that was because you knew up front, or at least you were told up front, neither one of these groups are necessarily as good as they claim that they are. And since we have a couple of people who really, really lean into more the lawful good, I think their approach was, well, let's just steer clear of them entirely. And that's fair. That's a valid approach. But yeah, so I think it's good for the GMs to clearly communicate some of that with, you know, the players as well.
Yeah, and I think just through our discussion here, one person's good or lawful good isn't the next person. So
right.
if the GM's like, no evil people in this campaign, please, in this party, ask him what that means exactly.
Yeah.
You know, can you have just a self-interested, you know, person that likes to wine and dine every time they get a chance in a city? Is that okay? Or is there some other thing? Is it murder hoboing that he doesn't want, you know? Talk with them, I think, is the important, just to get that clarity on definition.
Yeah. Are they actually worried about the fact that you want to have a character that goes to a brothel every once in a while, or gets drunk and every once in a while has to make a con save to avoid passing out? Or are they really more worried about you being too much of a wild card that they can't control at the table, and playing something that's going to intentionally derail the campaign?
Yeah, I remember in a game, I wanted to, you know, ask the party, or, you know, ask the players and the GM if playing an evil character was okay. But I was like, I wanted to make a point that my character, as a last resort, would kill. But prior to that, they're just, you know, it's that power and security. I think they were lawful evil, trying to, you know, be the best and to have control of a lot of things, but be the last one to resort to violence, like, you know, using social guile to kind of manipulate a lot of, you know, people, enchantment spells, etc. But then you have the, you know, the paladin or fighter just being like, I'm gonna kill whoever doesn't agree with me,
right?
And then this made a lot of people go, huh, yeah, your evil character's fine, I'm a little more worried now about this good lawful good character.
This person looked at me funny in the bar, and so I chased him into the alley and ran him through.
Yeah, so, you know, just asking like, oh, can I play an evil character, is very much a loaded question. It could be misinterpreted. Saying, hey, can I play a murder hobo versus, hey, can I play a, you know, manipulative, you know, psychopath, or just a cool, calm, and collected, you know, Machiavellian type character. You know, those are very different extremes there.
Yeah.
So it's worth thinking how you want your character to come across, asking the GM if they could fit that in their story, if it makes sense, and if it, you know, and then ask your party, you know, if it's, or ask the players if it's okay to have that. You know, it definitely could ruffle feathers depending on how everyone else is in the group. Might not, you know, but it's definitely good to ask, but it's definitely good to get clarity based on just how different people define this, you know, alignment, morality, personal attitudes, etc. So
bottom line, make sure, hey, if you're saying I'm going to play a, you know, chaotic evil character, that you define what that means to you, and you make sure everybody's on the same page with a good working definition, at least, again, baseline, for starting out, so they have an understanding of what to expect, and they're not, you know, anticipating you sleep, you know, sneaking off in the middle of the night, slitting people's throats, you know, becoming Jack the Ripper at every single, you know, location that you go to. And on the flip side, if you say, I'm going to play a lawful good character, maybe they have the great, now we can't do this. Now we can't lie to people. Now we can't, you know, cheat at card games because the lawful good character is going to call us out, you know? And so it, even if you think you're playing a character everybody understands the concept of, go out of your way to define the what you think the alignment type means. Because you'll find that there's a lot of variation, shades of gray.
How many, you know, memes that are out there about, like, you know, the lawful good paladin trying to stop the chaotic rogue, you know?
Right.
Yeah. So there's definitely lots of different interpretations, and, you know, which one is it that the GM is sort of representing in the system or in the story? And how do the players, you know, adhere to that or not?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Cool. Well, any parting shots? I talked a lot tonight, so I'll let you have the last word.
It was all good. I mean, just like I said, just talk with your GM, get a better understanding of what it is that, you know, if you want something, you know, be clear about that. You know, work with the party. Make sure that it's not going to at least start out on, you know, stepping on people's toes. And, you know, again, bottom line, and we say this a lot, is just make sure everyone at the table is having fun. It's not all about you, but, you know, just
looking at you, chaotic, neutral.
Right. I mean, you could look at any of them and be like, right, yeah. You know, you know, but it all depends on the story. But just make sure that everyone's having fun. Even if it means checkups, you know, after sessions, you know, with party members, with the GM, session zeros, you know, it's important. Yeah, that's pretty much it. I mean, I like the pass. I like the approach of, you know, knowing that it isn't, you know, I don't need to be imbued by a dark god to be evil. I could just have a good time and be out for number one.
Right.
You know, so I like the pass in that sense, like for a role playing sense, but I, you know, again, just let the group know and say, look, I want to play a hedonistic individual, and then jot down chaotic evil on your character
right,
sheet.
Right. Or, hey, yeah, I don't really trust the powers that be to, you know, govern well. I really like think that there could be better people in place, and you secretly think that's probably me, and you jot down lawful evil, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. There's ways of describing that better. I love the fact that it opens up all of the different types to being useful, instead of, you know, there's six types that the players can play, and then all of the things you fight, there's six types that you can fight against, and like there's never going to be the overlap of the good guys fighting good guys, or, you know, the bad guys sure, might yeah. fight against other bad guys, so evil could fight evil, but, you know, and you have all that type of, you know, weird binary thing again with the us versus them idea. But having those paths, I think, helps a lot, that these are tendencies. This is the path that I'm walking, and I sometimes may step off the path and I'll find myself back on it. Or if I don't, I'll find myself on a new path and I'll redefine myself in that moment as to what path I'm pursuing now. There's a lot of freedom to that. You can maybe yeah. tell I live my life in the chaotic neutral world most of the time.
Well, that's all I got. I mean,
all right.
Yeah.
Well, like I said, this was taken a lot from easydamus.com. And check that out for sure. Give him a shout out. And I'll put that in the show notes as well. If you like this type of conversation, this is the first time that we had a little bit more back and forth where we didn't necessarily come in seeing eye to eye, and we knew that ahead of time. So leaning into the duel a little bit more this week. So if you like that type of thing, let us know and give us something else to fight about.
Or discuss.
Oh, yeah, I mean, sure. I mean, yeah. Nothing got heated.
I don't need to lose civility over this.
You mean nobody needs to get lawful good over things?
Exactly.
All right. Well, until next time. We will
next time.
Catch you guys later.